welcome to this special edition of the My Ag Life Daily News Report. Today, we are wrapping up our National FFA Week celebration, but we start off today with our news. The future for ag burning in the state. The Air Board makes an important vote. We'll have that. But first, I want to preview some of the things coming up for next week. Next week, we're covering the California Walnut Board and Commission industry meeting, and we highlight the citrus showcase that's coming up next week. We also hear from the nation's new agriculture secretary, Tom Vilsack. He talked to agriculture reporters on Thursday. We have some of that for you in a few moments today. And on Monday, we take an even deeper look at what he said and what we can expect from the administration over the next 4 years. But to start today, an issue that affects much of agriculture in the state, especially in the Central Valley, the ban on agricultural burning. Under existing regulation, agricultural burning in the San Joaquin Valley could end as early as August 31st of this year. However, farmers and ranchers in the area have asked for more time to adjust their practices to comply with the ban. California Air Resources Board Thursday approved regulation that would allow for agricultural burning to be gradually phased out through January 1st, 2025. The board held a hearing Thursday to discuss the issue and to hear from some of those who it will affect. Board member Dean Flores spoke in favor of the more gradual phase out.
And I can only say that if you looked at this chart in 2003, which this starts in 2006, you can see that even with the bill that was put in place, we had significant progress and we were really on the right track. But then again, you know, what happens is droughts produce dead trees, and dead trees and fallowing produce more mass. That mass has to be disposed of. And then you see this giant building up again, if you will. And you know what? We're never going to, as I think Nathan Fletcher said, we're never going to be in control of wildfires or droughts. We're never going to be able to say, you know, to a lot of folks when to fallow and when they're not in the Central Valley. But today's action at the end of the day puts that blue dot squarely within our vote, our action today. So I'm focused on the blue dot. I don't know what everybody else is focused on, but I'm looking at that blue dot on your screen and saying, you know, if we can, with today's action, set an end date, if we can literally for the first time say it ends and then work backwards. And in the process of this blue dot, if Richard Corey is not seeing progress, if we're not getting anywhere, if the district is stalling or creating task forces or thinking about conferences and talking about what could be, that's not what this board's message is today. This board's message is pretty clear. We're going to end the practice by December evening 31st on 2024. We're going to wake up in the morning on New Year's Day on 2025, not in the middle of 2025 or the end of 2025. We're going to wake up on New Year's Day in 2025, and we're going to hopefully see the trajectory that you see on your screen, because we had a final end date. And I just want to make sure that the board doesn't get lost in the trees. Sure, we want our executive director to come back to report to us that things aren't going well, because I know that every one of this, Sandy Berg, myself, Nathan Fletcher, I mean, the people have spoken, we're all going to say we're not going to concur, and this practice is going to end abruptly, period. There's not going to be a phase out. There's going to be an immediate non-concurrence end. And this is the message that I think clearly that Samir and the ag folks have heard loud and clear. It's the reason that we are moving in this direction. But if we're going to achieve that downward trend, we're going to have 30 months. And again, I'm totally willing to trade 30 months for finality. I'm totally willing to trade 30 months for an end to a practice that has been in existence for 160 years. And at the end of the day, that's what we're voting on. That's what we're providing. And that's the action that we're taking today. And as I mentioned before, you know, if you were on this board that passed on this item four times before Leanne became our chair, well, that's another topic. But today, this board, this new board, this new chair, these new members, you guys have this opportunity to have a final date on the books. And we have a wonderful lever called concurrence to pull if things aren't going right. So I'm just hopeful that everyone will see that, not get so caught up in the mechanics, because we want to make sure that we sit down with the district, that we actually work this out, that we achieve that blue dot, that downward trend, that ending. And then the only chart that I wish I had here was a picture of Gavin Newsom, because we're really going to need the governor. And we're going to need EJ and farm groups and everyone that can come to the table to say, if we would like to see no burns for those 30 months, then we certainly need the money in the incentive programs to prevent that until this finally ends. And yes, I know there's issues about incentivizing farmers and giving them money when they should be doing this on their own. But you know what? There's going to be an end to this. They're going to have to work that into their cost structure. There's going to be new technologies created. All that good stuff is going to occur. Market mechanisms are going to take place. But until that time, the governor can certainly help, absolutely help in taking those 30 months. And maybe it's a no-burn 30 months. Maybe we can fund that. And I'm hopeful that the governor's office is listening. I'm looking forward to our chair and others communicating that through the budget process and the May revise. And I just am thankful for all the great comments. And I'm really, really thankful that we put this little line that didn't seem much when we were trying to negotiate this through a very tough assembly, that CARB would have a concurrence power in this. And, you know, as I mentioned at the beginning, I never thought I'd see the day where it would come down to this, but today is that day. So thank you, Madam Chair, and I'm hopeful that this item will move forward.
After several hours of discussion, the vote was unanimous. That burn ban now begins January 1st, 2025. In other news today, the nation's new Agriculture Secretary, Tom Vilsack, held his first media call of his new term. During the question and answer section of that media call, Vilsack elaborated on a statement he made during his confirmation hearing. Vilsack served as Agriculture Secretary for 8 years under President Obama. The statement he made during his confirmation hearing this time around was that the USDA is a different department and he's a different person. In Thursday's media call, he added this.
I think one of the best ways to explain it is that for the last 4 years, I was the president and CEO of the U.S. Dairy Export Council, and I had the opportunity in that job to understand and appreciate more deeply and more fully the importance of trade to agriculture. I think I understood that as a previous secretary, but now I understand what it takes to be successful. We had several record years in dairy exports, and I think part of the reason for that was that we deepened our presence in these export markets. We saw more people on the ground promoting U.S. dairy. We saw more promotions. We saw partnerships being formed with universities and other organizations to figure out these markets in a very creative and substantive way. And I take that information, that experience, back into USDA, and obviously we'll be working with the Undersecretary of Trade and the team there to make sure that we're doing everything we can with the resources that we're providing to the various groups to deepen the presence in markets and to do as much as I can to facilitate the work of the U.S. Trade Representative's office in representing our interests in existing trade agreements in terms of enforcement and encouraging the expansion of opportunities when they exist. I think there are opportunities and we'll be happy to work once the U.S. Trade Representative is confirmed to provide whatever assistance and help we can as she does her work. And I think it's a different department in large part because of COVID. Obviously, we've learned a lot in terms of virtual working. You know, I think we've had an opportunity to learn a little bit about what works and what doesn't work. And so as we rebuild the workforce, as we deal with the vacancies that have occurred over the course of the last couple of years, as we reaffirm the important science role that USDA has, so we make sure the data that we're providing to you and others that you report on the condition of markets and so forth continues to be the gold standard. You know, there's a lot of work to be done, and I'm looking forward to it. In addition, I think there's a much deeper recognition of the importance of climate and the opportunity that presents not just in terms of the environment, but I think as importantly from a farmer and rancher and perspective, the ability of American agriculture to be a leader in this effort in climate. I think having participated with the Farm and Rancher Alliance effort with Honor the Harvest and having watched the dairy industry make a commitment to net zero emissions by 2050 in the dairy industry, I believe American agriculture is really poised to be a leader, to take first steps in terms of embracing climate smart agriculture practices, embracing regenerative agriculture, focusing on a variety of crop diversification and strategies, more embracing of renewable energy, capturing methane and converting it, the opportunity to take agricultural waste and convert it into a variety of ingredients and products improves farm income. It creates new revenue streams that didn't exist before. And I think it also creates an opportunity for us to create jobs in rural places, particularly manufacturing and processing jobs. I think it's a different department in part because of COVID. We certainly learned a lot about our food system in the initial phases of this virus and the need for resiliency, particularly on the processing side. And I think that lends itself to an extended conversation about the nature of the competitive market, the openness of the market. I know there are issues concerning consolidation, and I think USDA has got a role to play in making the system, the food system, more resilient. So a lot has changed, and certainly the challenges are great. We're in a crisis situation, and while we were in a financial crisis in 2009 when I first took over, we have the intersection of a healthcare crisis and a financial challenge that the nation currently faces.
We will have more from Secretary Vilsack on Monday. News from the California Farm Bureau. Severe winter storms in much of the country have affected vegetable farmers in the California desert, who have seen demand drop due to logistical problems in moving and storing produce in the affected regions. At the same time, warm weather in the desert causes vegetables to ripen quickly, leading to further oversupply. California Farm Bureau reports that farmers are saying the weather has added volatility to vegetable markets already coping with pandemic-related swings in demand. That's our news for today. When we come back, we celebrate National FFA Week. This is the My Ag Life Daily News Report. I'm Sabrina Halverson, and we'll be right back.
Soil and Crop Incorporated is your number one resource for sustainable nutrition. Growers are faced with difficult challenges, and Soil and Crop Inc. has the experience, fertilizer, and biological portfolio to dramatically increase yield and performance in your troubled orchards and fields. Contact Soil and Crop Incorporated today for a free consultation on how we can help reverse the challenges you face as a conventional or organic grower so you can increase your bottom line and become a better sustainable farmer. Contact us today at 559-564-1236 or visit our website at www.callnrg.com. Soil and Crop, putting nature to work for you.
Welcome back. This week on the My Ag Life Daily News Report, we're celebrating a program that's all about the ag life. It's National FFA Week, and for that, we've been meeting FFA members all week long. We'll hear from all of the state officers today, starting with the two we have not yet met this week. That includes the State Sentinel and the State Reporter. And that's where we start today. State Reporter Taylor Solicito.
Taylor Solicito, and I'm from Spreckles, California, which is just outside of Salinas.
What FFA group are you with?
Salinas.
Salinas. Okay. All right. Well, tell me, how long have you been in FFA?
So I've been in FFA since my freshman year. I joined after being introduced to it through my 4-H program and seeing older members in my 4-H program wearing their FFA jackets at the fairgrounds. So that's what got me into it. I signed up and I've been in it ever since.
Does your family have an agricultural background?
So my mom and dad do not work directly in agriculture, but my grandpa and my mom's entire family farms in Fresno County, and they've been growing almonds, walnuts, and grapes for generations now. It started as a beef cattle operation, but has gradually shifted into that. So that's kind of what sparked my interest in agriculture. And although I didn't grow up on that operation, it sort of taught me the value of hard work and dedication to the ag industry by seeing my family members and my grandpa always like dedicated to it and heavily involved.
I always tell people when you grow up in the Central Valley or in the Salinas area, you grow up with agriculture.
Yeah, it's always all around you. So it's something like, even if your family has no agriculture relations at all, just like, especially in living in Salinas, like you look out your front door and there's lettuce fields left and right. So it's always around you no matter what.
Right, exactly. So you've been in, you said, since your freshman year of high school. And what's your role now on the state FFA?
So I'm currently serving as the state FFA reporter. And although we do have like a bunch of different titles, you know, president all the way through Sentinel, we pretty much share the same job roles. Although we have different titles, we all work collaboratively and have like similar tasks.
And what would those tasks be?
On the day-to-day, we wake up, get an assignment from our assistant state advisor or a few assignments, work on them throughout the day, and then close our evening out around 5 or 6 o'clock. So it changes every single day, but it's usually something along the lines of putting on a Zoom webinar. Lately, we've been doing Zoom webinars focused on the ag industry. So we've invited different agriculturalists in to give a webinar to the entire state membership. So that's to encourage students to find different agriculture careers or paths that they can take out of FFA. Beyond that, we do a lot of different industry tours, then again, staying tied to ag. So we've been in contact with different agriculture companies or related items, and we get to meet with them and chat about their jobs and their journeys once more, similar to the webinar. This year, we've also gotten to do a lot of chapter visits where we go and see different schools across the state. And typically on a normal year, we would get to see many more, but we've been very fortunate to visit a few of the smaller schools up in Northern California, which is really unique because sometimes those schools might not get to be exposed to the state officer team and benefit from those different workshops. But on a year like this, those smaller chapters get to shine in that sense. So yeah,
that's really interesting. That's a great way to look at it because, you know, the pandemic has changed so much, but you're right. Getting to some of those smaller schools and some of the smaller clubs and giving them that experience because you can, because they're smaller groups.
Exactly. So I think the pandemic has opened a lot of doors in that sense. Like we wouldn't be able to traditionally come up with a Zoom webinar for students to attend from across the state because traditionally that would be done in person. And so everyone would have to travel to it. But things being on Zoom opens the door for a multitude of people to attend it. So there's benefits to it all and just being unique about it.
Yeah. So you guys carry a pretty heavy load every day then with everything that you need to do.
Yeah, we're pretty busy most of the time. It's a full schedule for sure.
Mm-hmm. So what are your plans for school after?
So after this, I'll be attending Fresno State. I'll major in agricultural communications and I will add a minor in agribusiness. With that education base, I hope to return back to the Salinas Valley where I want to do produce marketing and sales. I'm not sure exactly what that would look like, but I've had a few role models around me in the area that share similar job titles. So it's always been an interest of mine and FFA sort of pinpointed that for me.
I think you maybe have kind of hinted at it, but what would you say have been some of the most rewarding aspects of FFA for you?
I'd say the most rewarding aspect of FFA as a whole for me was the exposure that I got to different people in different career paths, because I feel like in other aspects of education, you don't necessarily get to dive deep into a career. Like at school, they cover all these different pathways that you can take, but in agriculture, they really help you narrow it down and find your interests, which I've appreciated greatly. And then also being fortunate enough to grow up in the area that I did, we have a very involved community and they're strongly tied to our FFA program. So getting to see people that are older than me serve as a role model has really helped benefit me in that sense.
For somebody who's maybe heading into high school and considering FFA as an option to get into, if they come from no agricultural background, it can be intimidating. Mm-hmm. What would you tell them?
I can definitely understand that. People get a little bit timid when they think like, oh, I have to be an ag to be involved in FFA. And I think that's become not the case at all anymore because of how wide agriculture has gotten, in the sense that you can do technology in ag, you can do leadership, you can be a farmer traditionally. Like, there are so many different pathways in agriculture that I think it opens the door to students from all backgrounds. And it's not necessarily that they have to go into an ag career, but being in an ag program is far more than just farming. Students get to learn a lot about leadership, technology, just so many different aspects beyond agriculture. And then also, I think, like, if they're timid going into the program, it's as simple as raising your hand. If you raise your hand for any opportunity that presents itself to you, there will be people that will help support you, guide you in the right direction. And I know, at least for me, my ag teacher was very strong. And if anyone raised their hand for something and they were a little bit nervous about it, she would be there to help walk them through it and guide them and make sure that they were the most successful in whatever they wanted to go ahead and raise that hand for. So I think it's all about breaking that comfort zone and knowing that there will be people to guide you through it.
California FFA reporter Taylor Solicito. Coming up next, we hear from the California State Sentinel. We'll be right back.
JCS Marketing is your number one way to connect with the ag industry. Through print magazines, digital media, podcast, and live and virtual events, JCS Marketing has the reach to inform, educate, and influence growers in the Western United States.
Everywhere you go, you see West Coast Nut Magazine on every one of my customers' tables. So that tells you everything. It's there, so they're reading it.
Our My Ag Life platform includes podcast interviews and digital articles for busy professionals on the go. Our live events, continuing education webinars, and virtual conferences help growers connect with leading researchers and industry leaders. Let JCS Marketing help you connect.
Welcome back. We continue our coverage of National FFA Week now. We hear from State Sentinel, Micah Ortiz.
My name is Micah Ortiz. I'm originally from Galt, so I'm from the Galt FFA chapter. And it's funny enough, the FFA center is in Galt, so like the move for me was like not too bad. Like, I still run into my parents every so now and then. But yeah, I grew up in the area. I lived here my whole life, and I'm super, super proud to be from such a strong community here in Galt.
So did you grow up in agriculture?
I don't have a direct connection to agriculture. A lot of my like experience with ag came through the FFA and ag education. Funny enough, when my dad immigrated from Mexico to the United States, he was a farm worker. So I guess there's that correlation between like me and agriculture. But for the most part, it was just me kind of learning all about ag through like my ag classes. And of course, like as I started learning more, I started sharing that with my dad. And then my dad started sharing his stories about when he was a farm worker. So it's kind of cool that like the industry that kind of gave him his start is also giving me a career now. So like my life is kind of coming back full circle. So it's really cool.
That is really neat. I love those stories. How did you get started in FFA? Did you start as a freshman in high school, and what pulled you into it?
Okay. Yeah. Funny story, actually. Mr. White was my soccer coach. So he was my ag teacher in high school. And I remember before soccer was like was a fall sport. So you do like summer conditioning and things like that. And as a freshman coming into school, like I was like, I'm just going to, you know, do my classes that I need to and just kind of leave. But Mr. White had other plans for me. So he actually had to switch my schedule around and threw me into sustainable agriculture biology. So like from there, I was like, okay, I guess, you know, I'll try it out and see how it goes. And then I really fell in love with like how you were able to learn like hands-on learning and like really being able to implement what you learned in class, like in real life. And then, so I kind of kept with it from there and like, and you know, just doing competitions. And then I really got into the leadership side of it, which kind of led me to where I am now. But FFA was just the thing that I got into freshman year. Not, I wouldn't say forced to, but I guess like, you know, my schedule was switched, so I had to like be a part of it, but I wouldn't have had it any other way. I'm really happy that it worked out the way it did.
Did you still play soccer?
Yeah. So Mr. White was, like I said, he was a soccer coach. So it made doing FFA activities and like being a part of like the soccer team really easy, because he would work around my schedule. And like, I think 95% of the team was also involved in FFA. So we were all like, if we had an event we needed to go to, we would all take that day off from practice and go do that event together, because we were all really invested in what we were doing at Galt. So it wasn't that much of a hassle. And the assistant coach also understood a lot about FFA through Mr. White. So I was still able to play both sports and still have a really good experience in FFA and still have a really successful high school soccer career.
So what were some of your favorite things that you did during your high school years in FFA?
I guess there's a lot of things that I can say that I really enjoyed. I really enjoyed competing. I think that's where like, because the competitive mindset of me was like, oh, I want to like win. I want to be the best at like what I do. My dad always used to tell me like, if you're going to do something, do it with like your full heart. So I took that very seriously. So like my sophomore year, I did a novice parliamentary procedure, and like me and my best friends did that. And like, that's something that I'll always really remember, because like a lot of us are like, our native Spanish speakers. So for us to do like a competition like that and compete at the state level was like something that was like really humbling. And then I also participated in the Agriculture Issues Forum contest, and we ended up winning state. And four out of the six of us were also native Spanish speakers. So it made that and like really cool. Then we went to go compete at nationals, and like we were some of the only students in that whole contest that were able to speak two languages and be really articulate with our words and be like well-rounded in our issue. So those two are probably some of the best memories that I had. And aside from that, like all the FFA meetings, you know, getting ready, doing all the work, those are things that I guess like really brought the best out of me. And like, because I wanted to put on really good events for everybody else and be a part of something that was really cool, that was built at Galt when I was already there. So I took a lot of pride in the work that I did. But those two stories that I just mentioned are probably some of my favorite FFA memories. And along with this year has been a super neat experience. And like, and even though we've had some challenges, we have a team that's able to like navigate through those types of things. Mr. White's super helpful with us trying to find things for us to do. But overall, I think those three are probably my favorite experiences being in FFA.
With this year and being involved on the state leadership team, what has that been like for you? Everybody else has talked about the differences because of the, you know, pandemic and everything that's going on. But what are you gaining from this? What have you learned? What have been some of the challenges?
When we first got elected, Mr. White, we had a meeting the morning after we had got elected, and Mr. White had said, leaders are called to a time. And I still believe that all of us were called to this time to be able to lead, especially during very challenging times. And there has been points where we were like, well, you know, what can we do? What are we going to do? But we've been really innovative in the way that we've been able to approach our work with students. We did these events called sectional leadership nights, where basically we got together with 10 to 15 chapters, and then we would host like workshops for them. The regional officers would be a part of that. And we got a lot of really good positive feedback from that. And because, I mean, it was really surprising because students spend a lot of time on Zoom. So for them to have a really good time on a Zoom call with us was something that was really cool to like hear about. And then even though a lot of the things are virtual, we still try to make them very engaging. And it is kind of difficult because, like I said, students are on Zoom calls all day. We don't want this to be another Zoom call that they're kind of dreading, but we want to make this an experience that they'll remember. And it has been a very tough year, mentally, physically, you know, having to have early mornings, long days. But I think the rest of the team and I have really kind of taken that challenge on in terms of like, you know, rebuilding what we've already had. Mr. White likes to call this year like a restart point. And I think we've taken that to heart, and we want to do a lot of things very differently and make sure that every student feels like they have a place here. And along with that, we've been able to do a couple chapter visits here and there. So those have been really cool, kind of having that sense of normality, being with people. But overall, there have been challenges, but I think we embrace those challenges and we try to make a really good experience for the people that we do serve, because this is a very unique opportunity that only six people get to do every year. And we want to leave an impact with the students that we do get to serve, even if it's just, you know, through Zoom. But I think students do recognize the work that we put in for them to be able to have a really good experience.
I think that you have you have kind of a unique story too with, you know, like you were talking about being bilingual and coming from being the son of a farm worker. And I wonder, and I've asked other people this too, but I wonder for you specifically, if you were to talk to your younger self or to another student, eighth grader heading into high school, who's thinking about FFA, but maybe feels like they're not sure it's for them, what would you tell them?
Oh, that's a really good question. I think a lot of the students that I do meet that come from very similar backgrounds as me don't really have a sense of direction. And I think coming into high school, that's where I really struggled. I didn't really know what I wanted to do with my life. And I think that's the message that I would relate to other students that are, you know, come from the center farm workers or like, you know, don't or speak two languages, that this is their place too, where they can find, you know, career opportunities and be educated in an area that their parents, you know, dedicate their lives to and see the work that they do that is really appreciated. And I think just like all in all, just like give it a chance, I guess. I think we don't do things because sometimes we're scared of how things are going to end up. But I think that if we just reiterate the message that, you know, FFA is for all students and like just give it a chance to see how much and see how much you like it. That's, I think that's really good. What's going to bring them in. And just again, reiterating that this is a place for everybody, no matter what. And I think me being bilingual and like being on part of the state officer team has inspired students to kind of do the same. And we held a state officer or like a FFA officer questionnaire webinar last week. And the amount of people that came to it was really cool to see, because even though we do have very challenging times, the diversity that was there, you know, we had students from Hispanic homes, students from Caucasian homes. We see people from all different types of life wanting to lead. And I think it's because those students felt like this was their place too. So I think reiterating that message that this is your place too, just give it a chance to see how you like it.
It's a great message. What are your plans for the future?
Yeah, so before this year, I actually spent a year at Chico State. I'm an agriculture science major with an option in education. So I, you know, studied a year for that. Unfortunately, COVID, I guess, kind of cut my year short. I ended up having to come back home in March and finishing my school year here. But my plan is to go back in the fall and, you know, keep on studying to be an ag teacher. I was fortunate enough to have an ag teacher that really pushed me and, you know, helped me, I guess, embrace who I really was, embrace my backgrounds, you know, embrace my culture. And I think that's the message that I want to relay with all students, no matter where you come from, that if you come from an agricultural background or non-traditional agricultural background, to have a lot of pride in what you do. And along with that, just being the best teacher that I can be, helping students be more knowledgeable in the ag industry and if they don't decide to go into agriculture, to be knowledgeable consumers. And, you know, when it's time to vote on agriculture policy, that they'll vote for agriculture, which I think is really important, especially here in California. But I think I'm really looking forward to being able to teach and, you know, being a mentor to students and helping students embrace themselves. And along with that, helping them learn a very complex industry and subject. So I'm really excited for that.
And you mentioned your dad a couple of times earlier. And so I'm trying to find a different question for each interview that I do. And so for your question, what I want to ask you is, what is it that you really hope your dad, who immigrated from Mexico, was a farm worker and told you a lot about his agricultural background, what is it that you want him to know about where you're at now?
Yeah, so funny enough, you asked that because like a lot of Hispanic parents don't really know what FFA is. They've, you know, a lot of the students that are a part of this are like first generation high school students or going to be first generation college students. And when my dad came to state convention one year, he was kind of blown away by like, oh, like there's actually a lot of people that do this. And I think now that I've been a part of FFA for almost 5 years, I think he starts to see the value in it and how much it helps students. And I think that goes for any parent out there that's like whose son or daughter wants to be a part of FFA, is that there's so many career opportunities and so many opportunities for students to be able to like get through college or find a college career. And I think my dad saw that message and he was like, well, you know, Michael's really involved in something that's getting the best of him. And I think he really pushed me with that because I always kind of knew that I wasn't going to be a professional soccer player. So he always pushed me to get more involved in school and to find what I really love to do. And I know that he recognizes now that I really enjoy, you know, teaching and agriculture. And I think he always talks about like, he's really excited for me one day to hopefully be a teacher and, you know, come back to Galt and do that here. And it's really cool to see like you're, my dad supporting me outside of something that's like not, that's kind of foreign to him. And it's like I said, something really cool. And I hope, and I know that my dad has that message. And for any other parents that want that want to know more about FFA, it's like, once you're in it, you just see an array of opportunities for your son or daughter. And I think it's really cool. And it, again, this is a place for all students, so you can find something that you like and go with that.
All right. Those are all the questions I had for you, but is there anything else that you would like to add?
Yeah. Well, thank you for having me. I really appreciate it. And like spreading the message that we have here at California FFA. It's a really like humbling experience to like be here and like get to do interviews like this, not all the time, but like every so often, and spreading that message. And I think just reiterating the message that, you know, the FFA is a place for all students, and no matter what, students are going to, you know, come and get interested no matter their backgrounds or what their parents do for a living. And I think that's a really cool thing about here in California, is that you find students from all walks of life come together because they have a passion for this organization, for the industry. And a lot of people want to go into the agriculture industry so they can, you know, make it better from what they see. And I think just reiterating that message that FFA is for all students, and, you know, we're learning to embrace that, and hopefully in 5 years we're starting to see more students, more memberships, and more diversity and more equity for all students. So I'm really looking forward to that in the future.
State Sentinel Micah Ortiz. We have highlights from the other state officers right after this. This is the My Ag Life Daily News Report, and we will be right back.
Having problems with nematodes? ProMax is your number one solution. ProMax is a powerful fungicide and nematicide that works to kill and control nematodes and soil-borne disease. ProMax is a powerful and easy-to-use product in your fields. WaterRight Technologies is your source for this powerful solution. Visit WRTAG.com/ProMax for more information.
Welcome back. To wrap up our National FFA Week coverage, we have a compilation of the state officers with some of their highlighted answers.
My name is Dean Hill. I'm from Templeton, California, and I'm from Templeton FFA, but right now I'm serving California State FFA, serving as a state president.
Tell me, how did you get started in FFA?
I really got started in FFA because of my brother. He had done it before me and fell in love with it, and just kind of talked about how good the program was at Templeton. So I kind of took his word for it, said, all right, and decided to take ag biology. Kind of walked into class with kind of that expectation that it would be pretty fun. And my teacher was right there and did not disappoint that. So definitely made sure that it was fun, and I kind of wanted to keep doing it. So I kind of would try to see what else I could do and what opportunities were available, and try to take advantage of many of those as I could.
So how did you come around to becoming the state president for FFA?
It's a great question. So kind of what I talked about earlier, when I joined the FFA, I kind of took, you know, opportunities as they came. And a couple of those were speaking competitions. A couple of those were also officer positions. So I started out at the end of my freshman year running for chapter office at my high school and sectional office, which is for the county. And I ended up fortunately getting both of those and kind of going to all these different conferences and doing all sorts of things that just made me fall in love with meeting people and going all kinds of cool places and seeing cool things. So I just kind of kept following that road on down. My junior year, I was serving as a regional officer. So for most of the schools for about San Jose down to LA, right on the coast there, I was serving that. And then I decided just at the end of my senior year that I would like to run for state office, which is all of California, serving 96,000 members. And, you know, sat through a couple interviews, tried to work my best off, but most importantly, I just kind of found out why I wanted to do it. And that kind of kept me going all through that.
Hello, my name is Mia Erisman. I am from Galt, California, and I'm serving as the California FFA State Secretary this year.
Through your high school career in FFA, what are some of the things that you got to experience?
I think going into high school, I was really excited to raise an animal, and I thought that that was all I was going to do. So I started off with sheep, and then I quickly realized that wasn't my thing, and I started to raise hogs. So that was a good portion of my experience, but also competing in different leadership and career development events. I found that the Agriculture Issues Forum was something that I was interested in, and we got to study the Sustainable Groundwater Management Act. So I presented on state and the national level as well, and I found that that was definitely my area where I felt like most comfortable. It brought me the most joy to talk about issues that are current and relevant and advocate on their behalf, like from a balanced perspective. So those were some of my highlights in high school. It was first raising animals, but then also those leadership development events.
My name's Emma Thorpe. I'm from Eastern San Diego in a town called Lakeside, and I've been in FFA for 4 years. So I want to major in food science, a double major in food science and global food systems leadership to work for the USDA one day, being a food technologist.
All right. So what does a food technologist do?
So depending on what you want to do, it could be food security. So making sure that people get enough food. It could be food safety, regulating like the food protocols and like making sure each food sample is safe and testing those. My plan hopefully is to one day actually like do international travel and make sure like people have enough food and educating them on how to grow their own food.
So you kind of want to tackle world hunger issues with that.
Yeah, that's like the main like big goal. Hopefully I want to start off with like just food safety and like making sure like all of our food that we do eat is safe, and then eventually like go into like lobbying and like working for like an international business, teaching others how to grow their own food.
If you were to talk to a younger student, somebody heading into high school, what would you tell them about the FFA program?
That's a good question. I think it's an opportunity to learn how to be themselves. Coming into high school, I didn't really like know my place or know like how to use my own voice. I was very shy in middle school and didn't do much to get involved with like leadership activities. I was kind of there just like doing the task. And especially in San Diego, people don't really know a lot about agriculture. And so coming in, they always think, oh, I have to be a farmer to be an agriculture or to be an FFA. And I'm like, that's not the case. We have a very diverse population at LCAP because we're so close to the Mexican border that one of our goals is trying to get those kids involved as much as possible. And so I would tell students, if they're trying to decide if they want to join FFA or not, that's a great chance to learn like who you are as an individual and grow from that using your own voice with public speaking competition, leadership opportunities. I remember one time at one of our campouts in, for our section that we had a middle school program just sitting there by their tent playing Uno, and none of the high schoolers were talking to them. So I walked over and I kind of knew them because they're from the Lakeside area. And so we played Uno together and we just talked about like why they joined FFA and how excited they were. They're so young. They like had so much energy. And afterwards, they wrote us notes. And I remember one from Emmy, who's the treasurer on that team. She said, thank you for being like the one and only high schooler to talk to me. And it kind of just like made my heart melt because I was like, oh my gosh, like the only high school out of like 200 kids. And so it's a great chance to leave an impact on somebody else's lives and like learn how to better yourselves to help others.
My name is Reese Gonzalez. I'm serving as the California FFA State Treasurer. I'm from Modesto and I have been in FFA since my freshman year.
What was it that drew you to the leadership aspect of FFA?
I found that I actually really liked public speaking, and that kind of derived from, I did do livestock judging my freshman year and had done it all 4 years. And I found that my favorite part of practice was not actually looking at the livestock, but rather making my reasons and getting to be really creative with that on how I wanted to say things, and the challenge of being creative, figuring out the accurate way to describe livestock. I kind of viewed reasons as like a puzzle almost, and trying to like fit where those pieces go. And I really liked the public speaking aspect of that. So that kind of pushed me to want to do more public speaking things. So then I did opening, closing, I did prepared speaking, And then that led me to the leadership aspect with, you know, running for office, writing speeches. So it really did come from that livestock background that I had freshman year. And then I was like, oh, I actually really like talking to people too. So it led me to that.
And what are your plans for college?
So I'm planning on going to Oklahoma State, and I'm going to double major in ag communications and ag business. And with that, I hope to do something with the media side of livestock sales. One thing that has always kind of been my passion and that has definitely grown as I've gotten older is how innovative ag has been, especially the livestock industry with livestock sales. A lot of times sales now are done online, including my family's bull sale. A few years ago, we transitioned to do an online sale. So that requires taking videos of the bulls, posting them on our website, creating a sale catalog. And I fell in love with that. So I want to do something that involves the livestock media with sales. So whether it's editing videos, creating sale ads for, you know, different livestock, or like managing the sale websites, I definitely want to do something with that.
And what drew you to Oklahoma?
So I went there in the summer of 2019 for a livestock judging camp and absolutely fell in love with it. It's a pretty big size school, but it has a super close knit family feel. And I think that really kind of drives from being in the Midwest. Everyone's super friendly, very helpful. I think sometimes California schools, it's a little hard because they're so big and they're really impacted. And sometimes it kind of feels like you're just a number. But I feel like Oklahoma, they really took that extra step to get to know me. I was able to meet with some different professors, and just really that welcoming environment definitely drew me in. On top of the fact that Oklahoma is a gorgeous state, I absolutely love the town of Stillwater. So yeah, it was just the perfect combination of everything.
Taylor Solicito, and I'm from Spreckles, California, which is just outside of Salinas.
What would you say have been some of the most rewarding aspects of FFA for you?
I'd say the most rewarding aspect of FFA as a whole for me was the exposure that I got to different people in different career paths, because I feel like in other aspects of education, you don't necessarily get to dive deep into a career. Like at school, they cover all these different pathways that you can take. But in agriculture, they really help you narrow it down and find your interests, which I've appreciated greatly. And then also being fortunate enough to grow up in the area that I did, we have a very involved community and they're strongly tied to our FFA program. So getting to see people that are older than me serve as a role model has really helped benefit me in that sense.
My name is Michael Ortiz. I'm originally from Galt.
If you were to talk to your younger self or to another student, eighth grader heading into high school, who's thinking about FFA, but maybe feels like they're not sure it's for them, what would you tell them?
Oh, that's a really good question. I think a lot of the students that I do meet that come from very similar backgrounds as me don't really have a sense of direction. And I think coming into high school, that's where I really struggled. I didn't really know what I wanted to do with my life. And I think that's the message that I would relate to other students that are, you know, come from the center farm workers or like, you know, don't or speak two languages, that this is their place too, where they can find, you know, career opportunities and be educated in an area that their parents, you know, dedicate their lives to and see the work that they do that is really appreciated. And I think just like all in all, just like give it a chance, I guess. I think we don't do things because sometimes we're scared of how things are going to end up. But I think that if we just reiterate the message that, you know, FFA is for all students and like just give it a chance to see how much and see how much you like it. I think that's really good. What's going to bring them in. And just again, reiterating that this is a place for everybody, no matter what. And I think me being bilingual and like being on part of the state officer team has inspire students to kind of do the same. And we held a state officer or like a FFA officer questionnaire webinar last week. And the amount of people that came to it was really cool to see, because even though we do have very challenging times, the diversity that was there, you know, we had students from Hispanic homes, students from Caucasian homes. We see people from all different types of life wanting to lead. And I think it's because those students felt like this was their place too. So I think, reiterating that message that this is your place too, just give it a chance and see how you like it.
Thank you again to all of the FFA officers for serving other students and for being active members of their communities. Don't forget, next week we are covering the Walnut Industry Meeting, the Citrus Showcase, Ag Secretary Tom Vilsack, and so much more. It's a heavy news week next week. I'm looking forward to it. This is the My Ag Life Daily News Report. I'm Sabrina Halverson. Thanks for listening.